99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
The Thursday Birds, Mike Frinelli, alongside Braden Fogerson and Ben Hootie. I gave it the mic. It's formal today. Coming at you for another edition of Red Zone. We're back. The Birds are back, as Braden Fogerson said on TV today. 3 in a row. Redbirds get back to 14-all. And they have won 3 in a row in the conference. Nice win last night, 81-73 against the UNI Panthers. The story's up live on WZND.com. And we start our show with that. Fellas, at the right time, the Redbirds are charging in the Missouri Valley. They've now gotten up to 7th in the Valley ahead of just a couple weeks away from that tournament in St. Louis. So we start with Braden Fogerson. You've called a number of games for this team. You talked about them today on TV, as I said. This recent surge has put together maybe the second longest win streak in the Valley, only behind Drake, who's won 5 in a row. How big is this moment for the Redbirds?
I think it's kind of pivoting. You kind of feel like something's starting to click, and I think what has started to click has been the opening up of your offense that you get when you have a shooter. When you have, you know, the ability to get some shots on the perimeter, you can then, you know, just completely change the way you play the game. And up until, you know, the first half of this year, we never really felt like we had anyone on this ISU team that was good enough at shooting to be able to do it. And now you've got Kinzinger as a freshman coming in and being, you know, a superstar for this team. And it has completely changed how this team looks. They feel a lot more comfortable with that being the case. And, you know, we still don't know, because this is going to be a tough final three games. You know, one of those is against the worst team in the MVC. But, you know, Missouri State is no slouch, and, you know, definitely not Bradley coming up on Sunday or Saturday.
They call it Kinsanity. I saw somebody post about it last night instead of Linsanity. Johnny Kinzinger, the true freshman, really kind of let his name be known during that Horton Fieldhouse loss, when late in that one he put in, what was it, three or four three-pointers?
It was at least three. It was a lot of fun to watch.
He was perfect in like the fourth quarter from three, and the game was at that point basically out of reach. I mean, they were down, I think, 6 points or so at the closest, but Johnny made it fun, and since then he has won the MVC Newcomer of the Week, and now he's won the MVC Player of the Week. If he stays around at ISU for all 4 years, which is not a given anymore in college sports, he could be looking at another Doug Collins. He has been really, really fun so far.
Yeah, I mean, he's been the most exciting part about this team, and it's kind of what Braden alluded to earlier, where it's this, they're getting off to a hot start late here, but this is where you build momentum into next season. They could still make a run here at the end, and you know, only a man can dream that they win the entire Missouri Valley Conference tournament. But I think this is a building block and a stepping stone into the future. And hopefully that future continues to have this kid around who has just been a stud for the Birds.
And that's what makes this game on Sunday so important, because the last time that we saw Illinois State play Bradley, the closing, you know, the post game talk was about, you know, what went wrong, and Peden was less like, you know, he talked about what went wrong in the particular game, but really the whole theme of that press conference was, we're just not there yet. There's a lot of changes that we had to make coming into, you know, his tenure as a coach, and they just aren't there yet. They're trying to improve, but they're not there yet. And this is the first time where you feel like there is a little bit of sliver of hope that, you know, they have improved, and, you know, it's only been a few weeks since that moment, but, you know, if you go up against Bradley on the road, definitely not going to be an easy moment, and if you can make something of it, you can really start to prove yourself, but if you look the same as you did a few weeks ago, well, then you still know that you have a lot of road left to hoe.
Bradley, 11-6 in the conference, 19-9 on the season. Winners of the regular season last year in the Missouri Valley, of course, fell to Drake in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament Championship last season. They are back for vengeance this year. They're third in the Valley behind Drake and the Larry Nerds, and they are well on their way to a potentially another run in the Missouri Valley Tournament. I keep hearing the same quote. Shout out Reed Watkins with the Vedette and TV10, who I was talking to about it today. who had said a couple times, if they win the next game, blank. If they win the next game, blank. First it was, if they beat Northern Iowa, they're back. And then Reed said to me last night, if they beat Bradley, I'm extending my MVC tournament stay through Sunday. He was just that confident. And, yeah, I mean, I think when they beat Indiana State, it's obvious that on paper, you know, just like the logic that the Bears should have won the 2020 NFL championship because they beat the Buccaneers. You know what I mean? Like, the logic on paper is the UCF, oh, we beat Indiana State, so that means we have no reason we can't go win the Missouri Valley Tournament. In a micro, you know, scope of this issue, it's actually kind of true. All it takes is three wins in the tournament. And if you can piece together a fourth straight win against another top team when two of your four wins are two of the top three teams in the Valley, it gets really interesting.
And the biggest thing of it all is I think the biggest momentum shift from earlier in the season or even 2 weeks ago is they're finally finding ways to close out games. That was their biggest problem all year long. And they put a stomp on Indiana State. But these last two games against I'm drawing a blank right now, but the last two games, it's still been close contentious games where the other team had a chance to come back, and Illinois State found a way to respond and come back immediately and not let the other team come back. And that's just different than how it was earlier in the season where they were letting teams back into games all the time. So if they could get out to leads in the tournament and hold those leads and close it out, then yeah, exactly as you said, all you got to do is win three and anything could happen in March.
It's a nice streak, and they've won three in a row on their own, and as it is. You look at Belmont and UNI, who are both 9-8, ISU now 8-9, and then Southern and Bradley, who are both 10 wins and 11 wins, respectively. So you kind of cut the crust off. Indiana State and Drake have pretty much sealed that one of those who's going to win the conference at 14-3, respectively. And then, of course, kind of right below ISU and Murray State, Missouri State and Evansville and UIC and Valpo kind of are the cutoff. Valpo 2-15, one of those two wins against Illinois State. And it just was, that was, I feel like that was kind of the win that sparked the Redbirds. It was that game that Peden said in the press conference, maybe it's time to start going to some of these guys that can show more fight. And that's kind of when we started seeing Johnny Kinzinger start a little bit more. And I think that decision is going to look pretty favorable on Ryan Peden moving forward.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing is this team just kind of had a lot of distraction coming off of, you know, for example, you had the, you know, the moment in the Horton Fieldhouse that was supposed to build momentum, and then you have a distraction, and all of a sudden you lose that opportunity. You know, to be able to be in the midst of and late in the run of conference play and facing some teams that, you know, you go up against and you win, you know, some tough battles too, it's a completely different feel. And it's not like I am sold on this team right now as it stands to, you know, be super competitive, but I am feeling like, you know, last year at this time we went into the MVC tournament and we were like, okay, we'll see you Thursday night. Hopefully you get back in time for
Red Zone. And we
this
did.
Time, they, you know, not only can they, you know, win on Thursday night, they could theoretically set themselves up to not have to play on Thursday night. It's kind of a long shot, but it is doable.
Fourth place.
How much of a tight battle of the MVC is around the area Illinois State is, it is in their sights.
Yeah.
Someone that I think is an unsung hero of this team, and he's been getting his flowers recently, and I don't know where newcomer of the year shapes up or what it might be, but Miles Foster has been just, we've been talking about Johnny Kinzinger a lot, and rightfully so, he's a true freshman who has been a scoring machine, but Miles Foster has just been awesome for this team because they finally have an answer down in the post to score, get boards. I mean, he's a double-double machine. He's been getting them just based, I think he's gotten one in every single one of these three-game winning streaks, so he's been really a good pick-me-up for this team.
You know who I like as a freshman is Chase Walker, too.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not the, you know, when you think of a basketball athlete, definitely not the body type for it. And yet, I mean, he uses it to his advantage. He is able to, you know, he still has some hustle in him. He's definitely not going to be the fastest guy in the court, but he has hustle. He gives himself opportunities to make big plays. And against Bradley, last time they saw each other, he was really the only bright spot. It wasn't enough to, you know, get things to, you know, where Illinois State wanted, and they ended up losing, but Chase Walker definitely looked good, and like someone that if you build and develop, he can definitely be kind of a nasty player to face in the Valley.
I feel like they've pieced together enough of a nice streak here where, like, even if they go lose to Bradley, I'm not completely discouraged. Like, I think things have gone well enough where, like, as you said, Fogerson, it's not a terribly difficult stretch to end the year.
The middle of the pack is so close. I think if they go beat Bradley, it can mean the world. But I honestly, I'm not completely discouraged if they lose to him. Because
I think even if they get close to Bradley.
Yeah it's really, they've been competing. Now.
This one's important, though, because how long has it been since they last beat Bradley?
Years.
Exactly. So it's time to change that tide. And what better way to do it off a 3-game winning streak, and you just beat a ranked team last week.
And can't just ride just the momentum. I mean, they had momentum going the previous time they faced Bradley, too, and they were at home, Illinois State, able to, get the crowd going and, Coach Peden going to pub and getting people to show up for that one, and it didn't work out. So you can't just purely base it off momentum and be like, we're going to be there. But, even knowing that fact, this team does feel a lot better than they did heading into the last time against them. It's just going to be a really, really important game for them.
I'm pulling up the details now about the last times they played.
And the other thing that's important, too, I think, about this 3-game winning streak, it finally feels like they've gotten their core of who's playing, what works, what doesn't work. We're seeing a lot of that 5-man group of Poindexter, Kinzinger, Lewis, Foster, and I'm missing one other person. Banks?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of been their crew that they've been rolling with for almost 30 minutes a game out of the 40. You'll see a couple other guys get thrown in there like Kazuki, and we've been seeing some more Chase Walker. But, and a big one is Poindexter. He's finally figured it out after he was just struggling at the beginning of the year. And now he's taking Curry threes from the Redbird logo. So it feels like they finally found that core group that if they want to make a run, that's that 8-man rotation that you're really going to see down the stretch.
I remember this game, by the way. This was a Saturday night in early 2022, 1/16/2022. The Bradley Braves came to Normal and lost 74-65 to the Antonio Reeves-led Redbirds in that year. And then since then, Bradley has won the last four in pretty dominating fashion as of late. They actually played for the first time. While I'm on this page, kind of a fun fact. They played for the first time on February 4th, 1905. Mm. And underbetters were the only ones who were happy as Bradley lost, actually. ISU won 39-13. Held the Bradley offense to only 13 points. If they could do that on Saturday, they're gonna be playing in the parade. Reed's going to be extending his hotel stay, I'm sure. We talked for a couple minutes here before we move on about the women's team. Of course, they continue to win as well, had a nice win over the weekend, and are kind of boosting their way into that potentially top four spots as well, so they can meet a tournament bye. It'll be Ben and I in that tournament calling those games. We're hoping for the tournament bye. I know Braden will be calling the games in St. Louis. You're hoping for a Friday bye. How cool would it be if we have two Redbird teams that don't play till Friday? It'd be crazy. I can't even tell you the last time that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, St. Louis is the city of champions, so anything can happen.
But, Ben, you've watched a lot of the women's games, and I'll put you on the spot here for the last few minutes of the segment. What have you been seeing from them recently to kind of piece together a couple nice wins and stay at the top of the conference?
Yeah, we talked about it last week, how, two pretty embarrassing losses in Iowa.
Yeah.
And I think getting back home was a major part of that. They feed off the home crowd when they're back here. I mean, 11-1 at home this season. That's pretty impressive. So they use home field advantage to really well. And it's the Deanna Wilson show. Just get it to her in the post and let her cook, as they say. Because she's been killing it down there, and it's just been an all-around team effort, and that's what we kind of expect out of Kristen Gillespie's teams.
The one home loss was that Marquette game that I called on the Networks of Espen.
That was an awesome game,
62-64, yeah. It was so close.
It was.
There was a chance at the end for a buzzer beater, and she didn't get it, but it was so close. I really wish they would have pulled that one off. That would have been so cool if they were still nursing an undefeated home record. But, yeah, that's the only loss. And if that's going to be your only loss at home for the whole season to, at the time, number 19 Marquette, I'm good with that.
Yeah, that works.
No issues either way. Well, when we return, we're going to round the bases on a new segment here on the Red Zone that we've done a few times. Each of us have a sports story to talk about, and we'll come right back. You're listening to the Red Zone.
Ever.
What?
1033 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I just threw an empty Sprite bottle across the room into a garbage can. Well, into his loop. I banged it off the side of the garbage can a couple times in a Kawhi Leonard fashion. I was kneeling down in the corner waiting for it to go. I said bang, like Mike Green.
Oh!
And it went in the plant.
Yeah, it went in the plant next to the garbage can. So I'm going to have to go pick that up before the end of the show. You know, just to prove to the listeners, I'll go pick it up right now. Ben, go start with your rounding the bases. Taking off at first base, you have some news to tell us about in the world of sports.
Yeah, we were talking about some basketball shots referencing Kawhi Leonard, who was in this past weekend's NBA All-Star game. That's where I'm going to start. The NBA All-Star game is absolutely broken, and it's getting bad to the point of where I just feel like no one's interested anymore. I don't know if it's because of an age thing or what, but growing up, not even being the biggest basketball fan, All-Star Weekend was always awesome. Getting ready to watch the three-point contest, the dunk contest, and then the following day, the best players in the world getting ready to compete against one another on the biggest stage before the NBA Finals. And now it's just turned into this mess of a weekend that's just so not enjoyable. They try and cover it up with flashy colors and digital courts, but it's just a bunch of players just going out there, taking the weekend off in Indianapolis. I mean, starting with the skills challenge. It's just them dribbling around and throwing passes in the nets. No one wants to see that.
Yeah.
And then the three-point contest, I don't think that needs to be fixed necessarily. I will say the one thing that came good out of this was the Steph versus Sabrina. That was awesome,
yes.
And I hope that stays. And I know they were talking about adding Caitlin Clark and Steph as a potential teammate. I already tell you who it is. It's probably Clay. But then we go to the dunk contest, and just no one wants to do it anymore. We got the last 2 years in a row, we've had a G League player win it.
When there's also a G League
dunk contest.
I don't get why Mac McClung's allowed in the NBA dunk contest. I'll say he's awesome, but like I want to see NBA players
right.
doing it.
And I respect to Jaylen Brown, even though he put up a horrible performance. He's
dunking
at least
over Kaisenot.
Yeah, right. He's at least an all-star that wanted to get into the dunk contest to try and get people to watch it. And then you go to Sunday, and Adam Silver summed it up perfectly, which just shows that needs to be fixed. His quote after the game was, "Eastern Conference scored 211 points. Well, congratulations." Like, it was like he knew that like there's something wrong with this game and it needs to be fixed. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but it's just not the same anymore, and
yeah.
It's just really boring.
It's not really compelling to watch a basketball game that's played completely differently from what a regular basketball game is.
Right.
And that's weird. And for the dunk contest, like, I don't know if there is actually any instance of injury being a reason that, you know, some people just don't want to do the dunk contest. I know that LeBron was one of the first superstars to not do it. But, you know, baseball, for example, we've had, you know, some of the stars that we've had that, like, really put on a show and make the Home Run Derby special, then go on kind of a lame second half coming off that. And I feel like, you know, if there's any sort of statistical way to track the effect that the dunk contest has, maybe that makes sense. But otherwise, it's just like, at the very least, it sucks right now. Don't make it the last event. Make the three-point skills, anything better other than that. Because 5-6 years ago, it was the main event, and now it's not. So don't make it last.
I think they need to find ways, similar to how they did the Steph versus Sabrina thing, find ways to bring in new events. I don't know what that is necessarily because not really that in touch with basketball anymore as to what exactly you can do, but something that just makes it more entertaining where the dunk contest is just feels part of it instead of what we're all anticipating the entire night. But my favorite part of this weekend was something that went viral, and it was an old clip from Kobe Bryant, and he said that the NBA All-Star game has turned into just, it's just horrible to watch, and that you can find a better game at the UCLA rec gym.
Yeah.
And it's true.
Yeah. I was, like, I think we literally made fun of this directly on the show a few weeks ago. I think the Pro Bowl games concept is so silly because the Pro Bowl in and of itself is so flawed. But I saw somebody talk about maybe the way to fix the NBA All-Star game would just be like a Pro Bowl games kind of thing where they do like a 1v1 tournament or something. Which could, I don't think anyone's going to want to do it because they'll get hurt. But like I don't, or they're worried they're going to get hurt. But I think that could make it interesting. I'd love to see some of these guys go 1v1.
I think this past weekend, and this will be the last thing I say, this past weekend made the Pro Bowl games look a lot better.
That is also true.
because the Pro Bowl games was at least kind of entertaining. At least the flag football game was a little bit entertaining because you can't really get injured and you're just throwing the football down the field and trying to score a lot of touchdowns. So, I don't know. It's just the game is broken and it's just not entertaining anymore.
Yeah. 1v1 tournament might be the only saving
I like that idea. Like kind of cool.
We move on to second base. Braden Fogerson, right after the NFL championship, you sent a meme that was, game's over. All that means is 1 week till Daytona.
How did
it live up to expectations?
The race was good except for the ending. So coverage is always a focus for NASCAR, especially on NASCAR Twitter, but especially for the 500 because the most people are watching. It's so important. So obviously, just like any other sport's biggest event, you're going to have the most ads. You're going to have the most ad breaks. It's going to be covered a lot differently, not in terms of just that, but also in terms of how commentators talk about the sport. They're going to kind of not necessarily dumb it down, but make in the back of their mind know that more than any other event of the year, there's going to be people that don't typically watch the sport watching it. They have to keep that in mind. But ads have always been a problem, and I wasn't even going to talk about the ads because everyone always talks about it. But what was really bad, so with 40 laps to go, there was two, three minutes of a Wendy's commercial that took up within 50 laps of the end of the 500. So with 50 laps to go, the commentators are like, well, 50 laps to go, this is when things get dicey, this is when things are important, everyone treats it really seriously. This is when everyone is on by now. People might have been saving their stuff, but now everything is important. And then they immediately cut to a two-minute ad break with a skit of a Wendy's commercial that is distracting, and then they come back, and then they talk about more storylines and do an ad read, and then go to another commercial. And, like, they have side-by-side, because unlike all the other sports, NASCAR is still going on, whether, you know, during commercials. But late in a race, they like to have side-by-side commercials. But it's still very hard to pay attention to and a lot less compelling when you're watching a tiny corner of the actual action and then most of the screen is taken up by an ad that you don't care about. But what was even worse than that frustration was the ending of the race, in which you had coming to the white flag, couple cars spin in the tri-oval. They've already passed the white flag. So the rule is in NASCAR, once you pass the white flag, the next flag ends the race. They try to keep it green as often as they can because they like to have a race to the finish, but sometimes you don't really have a choice. And when they are wrecking in the tri-oval, right in front of the start-finish line, any sort of wreck there, you're going to have to call a caution there, because by the time they get back to the start-finish line, they're going to be running right into a wreck if you don't call it. So they had to call a caution, and when that happened, two cars, both teammates, William Byron and Alex Bowman, side-by-side, and the commentators explained it like the rule has always been all my life. The rule was that once the yellow light turns on, which is how they determine what a caution is, that specific moment, you like pause that moment, and whoever is placed wherever on the field, that's where they finished. And the replay showed the yellow light turned on, and it looked pretty hard to argue that Alex Bowman was not the winner from that angle. They used a different angle to determine that Bowman was not the winner. It was Byron. But the broadcast never explained that because they never got that angle. So you get millions of people that have never watched the race before or only watch it once or twice a year, that, including a new audience of people that are only watching it because of a Netflix series that was supposed to also push the excitement for the NASCAR season, and it did. And this is one of the first broadcasts they watch, and they can't figure out who won and why. And the explanation that the commentators gave, which was correct, doesn't line up with the only replay they had to their disposal. And you leave with a sore taste in your mouth, not only because he's not a super exciting driver to win, but also because you can't tell why he won. And it was just, it's very frustrating, and it makes the broadcast look even more unprofessional than Fox already gets credit taken away from in doing so.
Anticlimactic. It reminds me of the end of the Eagles and Chiefs championship two years ago, and it was a big DPI. Was kind of the game deciding play.
Ruins the game.
Yeah, it ruins the game. It ruins a great moment.
Sour taste in your mouth.
An anticlimactic ending.
And unlike football, everyone loves football. You don't have to convince people that football is awesome. There's a bunch of people that are watching NASCAR for the first time, and your job is to make them watch it again. They're not going to watch it again if you have an ending like that.
No. We move on to the final segment of our rounding the bases here, our final five. I was going to do baseball. We're going to do that bigger in the grander scheme in the third segment. But we'll start with this real quick about Justin Fields. Friend of the pod, former Red Zone guest, and my cousin Tom Fernelli, CBS Sports. He talked this week on Instagram and X and a bunch of places. I think he was one of the first to report this whole thing about Justin unfollowing the Bears on Instagram, and Justin's dog Uno unfollowing the Bears on Instagram, and just a number of things. And I even though it was Tom reporting it, originally I just thought the whole thing was so silly, and I still kind of do think it is
just a PR stunt.
Yeah, but then Justin's response, like, not rub me the wrong way, but I think is the indication that he's good as gone, is all I'm going to say, because Justin would, like, if it was nothing, I think he would completely clear the air. And if it was something, he would just outright say it. But it's obvious that Justin is trying just to tiptoe around it. He was on the St. Brown Brothers podcast, and he compared it to, his quote was, "I know y'all mess with a girl, Equinemius, especially you. Just because you don't follow a girl on Instagram doesn't mean you're not messing with her," is his quote. That's crazy. That was the comparison, and he just was trying to laugh it off with a joke. The only reason I share his quote was because he's trying to laugh it off with a joke. And I don't know. Maybe, like Braden says, a PR stunt, but his response just seemed to make me like, is that it? I feel like that's it.
It was definitely poor timing of him to go on the St. Brown's podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was planned
probably.
Or not. I think what's going on here is, and I don't know anything, but if I were to take my best guess, the Bears have probably already talked to him and let them know their plans. And they probably want to work with him to put him where he feels best, or for the suitors that could potentially be out there, like Pittsburgh and Atlanta and the Raiders or whatever it might be. Maybe we could work with you to get you the location that you might best want to be in.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't think he wants to just come out and say, "I'm out in Chicago. They already told me." He's probably just saying,
Losing
hey,
all his leverage.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Loses all his credibility. Hey, maybe I'm sticking around in Chicago, but he also mentioned Atlanta. You know, Atlanta wouldn't be bad. They got Bijan Robinson, et cetera, whatever it might be. So it's just a weird situation. If at this point, if you're a Bears fan and you can't just accept the fact that Justin Fields is good as gone, I think you need to take a look in the mirror. Right?
Yeah.
And I also think that the decision's already made.
Exactly.
It's not like they're still, like, this has been talk in Chicago since before the season really officially ended in the NFL. And I'm sorry, but by now there's no way Chicago, especially when they made their, you know, hire for who's going to run their offense. We don't know yet and won't know till April what the decision is for sure.
Well, we might know if Chicago's traded before that.
It's funny you bring up Shane Waldron, though, because even just looking him up real quick, because I saw something about this earlier, I want to make sure I got the quote right. He's still, like,
That quote's cut off, though.
No, not this quote. I'm looking at this. This is different. The one where you said about the offense is already all set up. That was what I saw, too. That lacks context. You're right. But it's this other quote from Waldron saying, I totally believe the Bears scheme or my scheme works for Justin Fields or a rookie quarterback. That entire Bears crew was put in a room with a PR expert and said, hey, don't say yes or no for this entire offseason.
And that's awesome.
Because they keep trade leverage.
They need this leverage.
Yes.
Exactly.
They're going to keep trade leverage, and then at the end of the day, on draft day or the day before, they're going to trade Fields for another first-round pick.
Well, one last thing before we go to break. The Bears are gifted with an opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Nothing against Justin Fields and the player that he could be, but can he win you a championship?
I don't think so. No.
Can Caleb Williams or even, I don't want to say it because I don't want him, Drake May win you a championship? Maybe the Bears feel that way and that they'll have a better opportunity with that player over Justin Fields.
Time will only tell. We come back. A lot of Boris clients are not playing in spring training today or tomorrow. They're going to get a late start to spring training. When we come back, we'll talk about that in the MLB.
Want to
103 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. A couple years ago, Bryce Harper waited to sign well in spring training. Eventually, he went from being a National to a Philly. And then in his preseason presser, he said he can't wait to bring a championship to Washington. It was a cursed thing all around. It made Bryce look like a villain, and he only kind of regained a hero status in recent years as he's brought the Phillies to the World Series and was kind of a grizzled captain. But it really made Bryce kind of seem like a villain for a long time, that he agreed to a contract with a team that no one really cared about, and yada, yada, yada. It is seeming to shape that Cody Bellinger is following suit.
Not just Cody Bellinger, either.
Yeah, and a couple others.
Yeah. No, it's getting frustrating at this point, and I think it's bad for baseball that we are this far into spring training, we're about to start spring training games, and I would say, four of the top seven free agents going into this offseason are still on the board.
Cy Young is still out there.
Exactly. The Cy Young's still out there, the guy that rejuvenated his career, a Gold Glover third baseman, and the best pitcher in the playoffs this year are all still available. I don't blame Scott Boras for what he does, because that's why all these players go to him, because they know that they usually get the best penny. But I just think it's bad for the game that we have a guy that tries to do everything he can to get past the GM and go straight to the owner and tell them, hey, here's a blank check, whatever you write on it, let's get it done. No one wants to do that anymore. And I see Cubs fans a lot, because we're obviously in that space. I see Cubs fans that complain that they haven't gotten this deal done. But there's still four other free agents out there. No deals are getting done right now with Scott Boras, because he's just being stuck up and trying to get the best bang for your buck, when in all reality, some of these players, there are things about them that makes teams scared to give them that big contract that Scott Boras is asking for.
Four guys that will almost inevitably be all-stars this year are next, and Chapman, Snell, Bellinger, and Montgomery. I almost forgot Jordan Montgomery. And the bottom line of what you just said, Ben, is that looking at it from a Cubs perspective, Tom Ricketts and other owners are refusing to even talk to Boras because they don't want to undermine their general manager. And that's the bottom line. Braden, I don't think any one of those four is set on St. Louis, although there has been whispers about Jordan Montgomery, of course. But what does it look like from an outsider perspective? Obviously, the Cubs fans have been kind of clouded by still being attracted to the Bellinger prospects. What does it look like from your perspective when you don't really have super high hopes for any of these four, but you're just waiting for the season to start, and these four superstars are all still unsigned?
I think for now it just sucks, but this might not be a great example because he might have been on the decline anyway, but I remember Wade Davis being, you know, a really, really good closer at the time, you know, the year before he headed into free agency, and then his holdout was so long that he didn't come back until way too late and was just horrendous.
Same thing happened to Kimbrel. Yeah.
Kimbrel did the same thing. I think this practice is going to continue up until the point when some of these stars come back from all these holdouts and struggle. And, you know, I think that, you know, if these people have regiments, you know, maybe if someone wants to come along and make a change to how you train in the off season, if you're not with a specific team's program, that might work. But you know, you got to meet your teammates. You got to have chemistry with your guys. And if you don't know right now in late February where you were going to play baseball, you are going to play baseball for a team that you aren't familiar with up until, you know, midway through the season. And that's it has an effect on your performance.
I don't know necessarily if it'll hurt Chapman and Bellinger that much, but I think for the pitchers, like you said, we were talking Wade Davis and Craig Kimbrel, it's huge for Blake's. They could say they're throwing all they want. They've probably been throwing all offseason. That's fine. But these current pitchers that have been here for, what, 3 weeks now? 3 weeks with pitchers and catchers? They're all back in their team's throwing program and getting on a schedule that will get them ready to go for opening day. At this point, I think if Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery hold out any longer, I don't even think they'll be able to make the opening day roster just because of the fact that they're not fully immersed into back in that major league setting and role. So I think it's important for them to get a deal done soon because, as you said, you just got to get in that program because I guarantee you Montgomery and Snell are not going back to San Diego or Texas. So
you have two all-star MVP caliber batters, and you have two same statement pitchers. Yeah. Do you think there's a chance that any one of those four holds out into the season? For either of you. I can't imagine any of them doing it.
I don't think so.
I don't. If one of them was a closer, maybe. Like, we're talking about with Davis and Kimbrel. But I just... You know how much it would hurt any single one of those four players' development if they held out into the season and their value? I mean, you look at Bellinger, who his entire thing all last year is he reached back to close to his MVP level because he was so enthralled with Dustin Kelly and this Cubs regiment. And you look at, like you said, Ben, Blake Snell winning the Cy Young last year after playing the whole year with the Padres, getting into his team's pitching groove and everything like that. It's just, I don't think any of them are going to wait that long.
I think Machado and Harper signed like early March when it came to their free agency. That was very similar to this. So I think we could be heading in a direction similar to that.
Yeah.
I just hope it all gets done this week. I mean, games are finally being played. We haven't seen holdouts like this in a really long time. And the other part about it, too, that really stinks is we're not even talking. There's still a lower half of players that haven't signed either. Like, the Boris Four is obviously the big talk. But, you know, JD Martinez is still out there. Adam Duvall, Brandon Belt, that are all looking for jobs based on what Matt Chapman or Cody Bellinger might do.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's just screwing over the game right now. We want... Of course, baseball, like the limelight of baseball right now. We're trying to get it back into this positive sphere. But now we're getting stuck with some of the biggest players on the planet unwilling to sign and horrible jerseys and pants. And it's just...
That, you beat me to my transition. Oh, I was...
Just go ahead. Just take it
I
away.
Was, okay, no, hold on. I got to do it. I got to say, I was going to say that, you know, this jersey thing's just so bad. Like, what are we doing with the jerseys and the pants? Like, I now know what underwear certain players have because you can see their underwear. Like, what are we doing with the – like, not even just the jerseys. Like, why are you reinventing the wheel? And it's – everyone agrees about it.
Right.
We touched on it a little bit last week, but we didn't really get into it.
Dumb-looking jerseys is one thing. Like – it's not an issue. It's like those stink, but like
seeing their trousers.
Yeah, it's easy.
Bad.
Pants
what are
is like
doing?
Fix that yesterday. Like if the Cubs take the field tomorrow against the Sox at 2 o'clock for their first spring training game, and they're wearing the see through pants, I'm gonna turn off my TV. Like
I can't see Lance Lynn in these.
No, like it's just I don't. How do the players put up with it?
I don't know where. This must have been signed under the table without any agreement at all.
But
this is bad. How can you go into the season wearing these jerseys?
I mean,
pants?
I don't know the stats of how many players are Nike guys.
Yeah.
But there's definitely enough of them that there's, you know, going to be a good portion of players that cannot afford to speak out against the jerseys.
No.
Even though they're not Nike's jerseys. They're Fanatics jerseys with the Nike logo
it's
on
so
them.
Weird.
But, yo, Nike doesn't have any problem with outsourcing anyway. So, what are we doing with these? And just the whole, like, everyone loved these jerseys. And, like, it's not, like, I remember a few years ago, like, MLB had, I can't remember what year it was, but there was a year where just a ton of new jerseys came out. And it just felt like they were really coming up with something new. And it was when Nike first, you know, took over from Majestic.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt special, and people wanted to buy those jerseys. And now Fanatics has jerseys that could easily just be the exact same jerseys, just, you know, with whatever new feel they wanted to get.
Yeah.
And don't change the lettering, don't change where the MLB logo is, and see if it works out. But, like, the whole let's completely change it and make these jerseys look worse than my team's jerseys on Super Mega Baseball 4? Like, what are we doing, bro?
I'll go to Ben real quick right after I say one thing. I went to the Cubs team store on Sunday because I was at home and I wanted to get the spring training hat. And at the official team store, I saw the jerseys up close for the first time. And, like, just feeling your finger on, like, the back on, like, the jersey patch, it's like a stitched jersey you would buy off DHgate. It's bad.
That And that's my biggest problem with it. They're charging so much more for heat press jerseys. The only stitching on the jersey is the Nike logo. That's the only thing that's stitched on. Everything else is heat press, which I guarantee you how much it costs them is probably like 5 cents to produce.
Oh, but don't worry, it's lighter for the players.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna make the fans compared to last year you were charging about, I don't know, $150 for a jersey, which is reasonable.
Yeah.
To now $300 to $400 for heat press jerseys. Just get out. It's so bad. These jerseys are so, I know we talked about it last week, but the more the details have come out, and even going, I saw something earlier, because when they tuck their jerseys in, you could see
the tails of,
it. And it looks like they're wearing, like, a diaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's just bad.
Picture of Shohei is the one going viral, where Shohei's his first Dodger blue or whatever, and he's, and all you can focus on is that he has, his jersey is, like, see through his pants. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is silly, and I don't, like I said, the stupid jerseys is one thing, but the see-through pants is an issue that needs to get fixed yesterday.
Yeah.
I think we now have an appreciation for what the jerseys used to be, and ideally, the fact that everyone is having this discourse about it is going to lead to so many people refusing to get them that Fanatics has no choice but to fix their mistakes.
So it's confirmed that it's Fanatics, right?
It's
Fanatics
so weird.
Jerseys under Nike's label?
Yes. And Fanatics has always been hated on for their customer service is bad. You post a tweet about, you know, complaining about something you got from Fanatics. Usually people like getting the wrong team's jerseys. I've dealt with that before a little bit. People already know that it's bad, and then you're going to tack that onto Major League Baseball and do that, and this is what you get.
They look like a jersey you would get at a jersey giveaway.
Right.
Like
when
you would go to the ballpark and get your Ernie Banks jersey that was cheaply printed on, but it's still nice because you're getting it for the price of your ticket. Why am I going to spend $300 on the same jersey that I got at a giveaway?
Literally, these jerseys are worse than the. You see the Lakers gave away, like, to everyone at the Staples Center on the
the Mamba jerseys.
Yeah, the Mamba jerseys on the statue night. They gave out like stitched Kobe jerseys that were like actually decent quality, like not like peak quality, but like they were better than these MLB jerseys. They weren't heat pressed. They were good jerseys. So if the Lakers can afford to give one of those to every single person in attendance, it really is silly. And like you said, Ben, the fact that these jerseys are now upcharged is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We go into spring training tomorrow. There was the first game today. What did the Dodgers end up winning by?
14-1.
14-1 against the Padres. They could use Blake Snell. Although it's spring training. I mean, and they scored, what, 8 runs in the first inning? And then I saw that,
I think they had 4 of their main guys go, Mookie, Teoscar, and then they were out by the second half.
Shohei didn't go?
No.
Cubs and Sox will play tomorrow at 2 o'clock. What's going on in Jupiter? Who are the Cardinals playing well?
Marlins.
Okay.
Yeah. Tim Anderson. I mean, they share the stadium, so it usually works out that way.
You didn't see that?
Is that today?
Tim Anderson and the Marlins.
Really?
Some New York White Sox people.
I did not see that. Wow.
1 year, $5 million. Played shortstop for them.
1 year, $5 million?
Wait, what?
Was that what you said?
Yeah, 1 year, $5 million.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, no, here it is. I did not see that. I've been busy all day in class and such. Yeah, that's big. We'll end the segment with that. That is a... Yeah, well, he already gave his goodbye White Sox post at the start of free agency. He had no interest in returning there, so he couldn't be enticed with the prospect of a new stadium. That's fun. That's fun. It could be kind of like a prove-it year. It's interesting.
I mean, before last year, he was a batting title winner, multiple-time All-Star, so maybe prove it. Get right.
It gets
Miami.
Back to the meme of the 110-win Dodgers losing to the Marlins in the wild card series.
And the power of friendship.
Power of friendship and 86 wins. I think that's going to be the bottom line. Maybe if Anderson has a positive war, maybe it'll be 87 wins now. When we come back, we're going to do 3-up, 3-down here on the Red Zone. Three up, three down on the Red Zone. The last 50 minutes of our show. Steve Cease, his game, he leads the way, just like Pick 6 in the fall. 13-5 through 3 weeks of the Pick 6, or excuse me, the 3-up, 3-down, which is good for a .722 batting average. Ben, 12-6, same as me. I had a nice 5-1 week to bounce back. Braden, 11-7, and Schemas are against last week. He's 3-3. We'll be back to us three and Steve this week as we get into 3-up, 3-down. And we have another classic for Steve Cease tonight at 7 on E+, Little Rock and SEMO. Little Rock is favored at 78%, just under the 80% rule, and he takes Little Rock to win. I'm not shocked by that. Should there be a conversation, a dialogue, about if you can pick one over 80, but also only like one more within 75 to 80? Or is it a...
No, that's the method to his madness.
I was going to say, if you're going to do the homework, you might as well deserve it. I'm okay with that.
No, yeah, that's the method to his madness.
I will say for my first pick, we'll see if you guys can find how fast you guys can find my trend. Tonight at 7 on the Big Ten Network.
Got it.
What's my trend?
You picked all Big Ten games besides the
okay. One that you were forced to pick. I was going to see if you could do it like as I spoke it out.
You looked at yes.
Okay, Ben spoiled it before he even said it.
I ruined everything.
Yeah, you did. I picked all Big Ten games. And it's actually might hurt because it was kind of hard. Like, the Big Ten low-key doesn't have very many good games.
No.
I kind of wanted to do it just for the heck of it. I'm going to do like a different conference next week. My first one is Ohio State and Minnesota. Minnesota's favorite at 59%, although I'm taking Ohio State Buckeyes at down. And, there we go on that. Ben?
Yeah, I'm going to fade you on that one. I have that game tonight as well. I'm going with Minnesota, 59.80%. That's one of my ups for this week.
We won't be tied anymore, no matter what, then.
No matter what.
No matter what. Braden.
Speaking of ups and Big Ten, Penn State versus Iowa, 81.60% in favor of Penn State. But I don't buy it. I'm picking against that. I'm picking it was actually in favor of Iowa, and despite the fact that the game went in favor of Penn State the last time they faced off, and I think it's really more just because of, you know, where the home venue is a little bit. But, I feel like even though it's an 81%, I feel like it's really a lot closer than that.
Steve Cease, Friday, February 23rd, 6 o'clock start on E+, North Florida and Jacksonville. He is taking North Florida, although Jacksonville is favored at 54%. That is a down win. That's such a random game. But I guess it is a coin flip game. He does his homework. He really, really does. I was just doing a dumb trend. I'm going with more Big Ten. Saturday at 11 on Big Ten Network, Indiana and Penn State. Penn State is favored at 68%. That's good enough for me. The Nittany Lions, they helped me out last week. I'm hoping they do it again.
I'm looking forward to tonight once again. Same trend as I did last week. Even though they lost on Sunday, I think. I forgot who it was, too, for their third loss of the year. But Purdue's taking on Rutgers. Rutgers has been on a really hot streak, so I kind of wanted to stay away from this game. But Purdue's at home, 96.3% on the up. Give me Purdue.
Yep. Braden?
For me, the only one that I found tonight that kind of looked like a really good one to go for would be California Baptist versus Abilene Christian. I have another one that might be a little bit tougher to pick later, but this is the one that I feel good in. I'm picking Abilene Christian to win. They're 70% favored in this one.
Steve, for his third game, another Friday 6 o'clock start, E+, Purdue-Fort Wayne, not Purdue, versus Green Bay. He's taking Green Bay. Purdue-Fort Wayne is favored at 52%, so it's another coin flip game. He's going with Green Bay as a down. So now, through two down picks, Steve's total minus percentage is only like 6% of a chance of them losing. But he did his homework. What else can we say? I got to respect it. Can't hate that. Sunday at 11, I'm going with another Big Ten game shocker, Maryland versus Rutgers. Rutgers is favored at 55%, but I'm going to take Maryland in this one at down. Ben?
Looking forward to Saturday on ESPN+. Drake Bulldogs versus UNI Panthers. This is one of my NBC games. I decided to pick two this week. UNI at home, but I just saw them lose to the Birds last night, and Drake is really, really good. This is my up pick, 65.6%. Give me the Drake Bulldogs.
That's a value line. It should be way higher for Drake.
Yeah.
That's a classic value line.
Hopefully my brother's not listening. His basketball season's over, so we might not be at practice for anything. But Alabama against Kentucky, and Alabama favored 61%. Kentucky's at home, and I think that I don't know if I agree with the odds there. I think Kentucky just kind of matches up well against that game as well. So I pick Kentucky to be able to upset Bama, that's ranked, I believe, 13th in the nation, if I remember correctly.
I love that.
That's a good pick.
That's a great pick.
Good pick. Is your brother a Bama fan?
He is a Bama fan, yes.
Big pick. Moving on to the Valley for Steve. On Saturday at 5 on E+, it's that same game Ben went with. It's the same pick Ben went with. Drake over Northern Iowa at 65% for his Valley pick. We move on to my fourth game, and it is the Big Ten Conference on CBS on Sunday at 1 p.m., Purdue and Michigan. So I was tempted about the Purdue game tonight, but yeah, coming off a loss, I was scared a little bit. Michigan is absolutely abysmal. Purdue is favored at 92%. Figured even if they find a way to lose two in a row like Indiana State did, there's no way they don't bounce back against Michigan. So at a 92% clip, I couldn't turn down the Boilermakers. Ben?
For the third time out of 4 weeks, I'm picking an Oregon game. I don't know why. I love the late-night Pac-12. Even though this is a 6 o'clock start, it's Oregon versus Cal. Oregon's the favorite. But give me Cal at 56.30% as my down pick.
The band is on the field. I was just looking into that today, so when you said Cal, it made me think of it. It was, for some reason, I think it's is a anniversary of Miracle on Ice. So they were talking about the best calls ever, the best sports calls ever. And somebody put at 2 or 3 the Cal versus Stanford in 1982, the Miami Miracle kind of thing, with a bunch of laterals. The band is on the field! And Cal scored a touchdown to win, and it was through all the band members and just killed some trombone player in the end zone. Didn't actually kill him, but that was a random tangent. When you said Cal, it made me think of it.
It made you think of it.
It made me think of it.
Put a spark in your head.
Hopefully, Cal can cross that one off for you as well. And maybe the band will take the court. That'd be crazy. It's kind of like when the guy who's mopping on the other end gets knocked down.
Yeah.
That's awesome when that happens. Hopefully that happens in this game. All right, Braden, take it away.
This is my second to last one, right? We have one left each after this one?
No,
we have two left after this one.
Okay, I can't count.
You're going out of order because you were trying
to... I am. Yeah. This is the most out of order I've gone, and now I've confused myself. What I do know I have not said yet... Creighton at St. John's. Creighton favored by 60%. They handled them last time. They'll do it again.
I see one of your picks that you haven't said yet at the very top of your list, and I'm not excited for it.
We'll
get to that one soon. Mm. All right, Steve's fifth pick. Sunday the 25th at 11 on ESPN2, SMU versus South Florida. SMU favored at 54%, but Steve's going with South Florida down 3 coin flip games for his down. He's really trying to build that lead. I respect that out of that. We move on to my pick. Yeah, my last Big Ten pick, because unfortunately I couldn't pick a Big Ten Valley game. Although for baseball I can apparently on Tuesday. But Wednesday the 28th at 6 p.m. on Big Ten Network, Northwestern and Maryland. Maryland is favored at 63%. Northwestern really helped me out last week. They got a nice win. I'm going with Northwestern to win this one at down.
Going to Saturday, 6 o'clock, ESPN+. We got the Louisiana Raging Cajuns versus Southern Miss. Louisiana the favorite. On the road, like Southern Miss, though. They've been kind of a scrappy team this year, and they're pretty similar to Louisiana in terms of conference ranking. So I like Southern Miss to pull off the upset as my down pick.
Braden Fogerson.
I'll be going down for my last time. Give me Oral Roberts against Omaha, 63.6. And Oral Roberts not favored, but I'll take them there.
Move on to Steve's final pick.
Damn.
For his 98% favored. It might be the highest favor we've seen. So no, actually, last week we had Pepperdine at St. Mary's at 98% as well.
He was so excited for that game, too. Did he get that one?
He did, yes. Yeah. I don't know what the score was, but he did. The ACC Network, Louisville, visiting Duke. Duke is favored at 98.7%. Ooh-wee. Duke's going to get that one, and Steve thinks so as well. That's his up pick. That's his over 80 pick. Steve with a foolproof 6. That someone's got to lose that, but that seems like a pretty good 6.
I love this is that last game is only the 6th time out of however many games we've done that he's done a Power 5 school. Meanwhile, Mikey's got 5 out of his 6 Power 5 games. I've got 4 out of 6. Braden goes a little different, but still enough.
I don't know the method.
Enough power.
I don't know the method.
He's all over the place with these conferences.
You complained last week of how long I take. It's because of my method. It's just like I have to find something that speaks to me.
Yeah, I went 5-1 last week, and I had all Power 5 except the Valley. So my first week I was going random. I had Norfolk State in there and St. John's, and I was 3-3.
I can only pick Power 5 for the most part.
Me too, because I don't know enough about any of these other schools. Yeah. I don't know who's hurt. I don't know, like, a team might be, 18 and 8 or something, but they're not going to necessarily be as good. I don't know week to week, game to game. I never watch St. Mary's or Norfolk State. Half the time, if nothing's out on a Saturday, yeah, I'll turn on Duke. I'll turn on Purdue. Right. Like, I know a little bit about these teams. But speaking of which, I'll move on to my last game. It's in the Valley on Wednesday at 7 on E+. Southern Illinois visits Bradley after Bradley loses to ISU. They're going to need to bounce back at a 77% clip. I'm taking Bradley.
Sticking similar to that, on Sunday, February 25th, I got Southern Illinois at 1 o'clock facing Evansville. Evansville, the home team. Southern Illinois, the favorite. Southern Illinois at 65%. But this is my last down. Evansville's been pretty scrappy this year. So I'm taking the Purple Aces.
Just hating on the Salukis today.
I know, right?
2 picks in a row.
And they won me my last game of the week last week.
No loyalty.
Braden?
So for my last pick, for the first time, I am picking an Illinois State game, and in this one, Bradley will disappoint us again. They're not going to be on the call because it's on the road, but we'll probably be covering that post game.
We will.
It's going to be rough, and 90% clip, I'll take that.
There will be online coverage at WZNE.com. So, yes, the plug is, like, half valid, but, it won't be live.
No, it definitely won't be live, yeah.
No, it won't be live.
When you picked Oral Roberts, it, like, kind of, like, lit off something in my brain. I was wondering how Max Abmas was doing. You guys remember him?
When they were, like, good at the tournament. Yeah.
He's at Texas now, and he's averaging 17 points a game, 3 rebounds, and 4 assists, which is just crazy.
I get Oral Roberts and the Peacocks. Who was the Peacocks?
St. Peter's.
And Doug Eater. Like, similar logos, similar colors, like, similar story, like, what the heck is this team doing here? I always get those two confused.
What was the name of the team that upset Virginia?
Furman.
Furman was Virginia.
UMBC.
That was last year. That was awesome.
Oh, you're talking about UMBC.
Yeah.
Skeed, I just closed the Google sheet. I got to get back. But Skeed picked UMBC last week, did he not?
He did.
What ended up happening there?
I faded him. He was correct.
Oh, UMBC won?
Yeah, UMBC won that one. UMBC is pretty bad this year, though.
Who did they play?
Albany at that one.
I'm trying to find
it. It was like a 52. It was pretty toss-up.
Why don't I see that on his list here at all? Oh, here it is. UAlbany versus UMBC. Yeah, 52%. Yeah, that's... Skeed, we love to have you on, but picking an up at 52% was kind of crazy. It worked for him. It worked. A coin flip for the up is pretty crazy. All right, guys, it's been a fun episode. We'll be back next Thursday. We appreciate it. Go Cubs, go.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson will now drive inside. Going to find Mary Clapton for her first three of the day. And it's good.
Curry owned the league last year. Oh, and sure. Personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
JD, I've got five.